Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Photo Show, the first show of 2022. I think if you say 2022 quickly, it doesn't sound as bad as it really is. I can't believe winter 22 already. This year, we're going to have a format similar to what we're doing with lots of people coming on the show, some interviews, some topics, and the usual range of news and gear that we spot during our ramblings in between shows. Looking around the board tonight, we've got our experts back with us, Damien, Ian and Neil, all raring to go for this year. Don't forget, if you have any comments or questions for the guys, please send them in. There'll be a load of links at the end of the show for you to contact us. So let's go around the board. Good evening, Damien. How are you? How was your Christmas?
I'm very good. I'm really good. Thank you very much. And I've got a big apology, but let's get past Ian and Neil and yourself, and then I'll do my apology. I'll keep you in tenterhooks till then. But I'm okay. Really good. Thanks. Okay. Yeah.
We might have a unique story here. Neil, how are you doing?
I'm good.
All how was good? Christmas, New Year?
Christmas was really good to get back to the UK, see the family. The French let us back through France after initial pause. Yeah. But yeah, it's good to be back. Looking forward to a few clear nights in the next week as well. Get out with the camera and maybe do some star photography.
Good. I got a natty picture of you and Damien here having a photo walk around. Was it Birmingham you were in? Oxford?
It was Birmingham, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Very picturesque good. Place.
Yeah,
and Oxford, it was, Martin. I'm teasing
you. Oh, yeah, yeah. And there's this lovely photograph here that you took of the spires. If you're having a look at that, that was great. And then look here, this is how you took it, laid on your back. I just thought you'd had too much beer, but you were actually working quite hard. Yeah, good. And Ian, good evening, Ian. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Can't complain.
Yeah, busy, family good, family Christmas.
Yeah, you know, busy work. Weather's been poor, not much photography. 2022 is a big year for me. 20 years of photography for me.
Yeah.
This year. Yeah. 2002 is when I got my first camera.
So are you going to treat yourself to a new camera this year?
Ooh. No, not at all.
First camera, there's an interesting one. First camera I got was in 1970. It was sent to me by my nan from Australia, and it was a...
How many megapixels was that?
It was a Topcon SLR, standard 50mm lens, and it's the metering was where you had to match the two needles to get the correct exposure. Really weird thing, but yeah, that started me off in photography. But that was about 1970. Good grief.
Oh look, I've just found my first camera, a Kodak DX3600 digital camera. Wait for it, 2.2 megapixels.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what started it all off.
No film. That's how I learned. Started on film.
No.
Yeah, I was film first. But
go on, Damien. So you had the camera with the cover that you put over your head, and you took the glass.
I had a little Kodak camera that I took around. I found some pictures of me trying to use it and stuff like that, black and white. First pictures were Chester Zoo, so and a picture of the bus going to Chester Zoo. That was it.
I think my dad had an original box brownie, if I remember. He had a camera like that. I must try and dig out some of those old photographs he took. What was your first camera, Neil? Can you remember?
I'm just trying to think. I think it was a Minolta. So technically, that makes me a Sony user.
Yeah. They used to make damn fine photocopiers, but I'm not sure about the cameras. Were they the first? Was it the Minolta 7000, the first autofocus camera?
I have no. I couldn't tell you what model it was.
I think they brought out the first autofocus.
But it was a film. It was a film camera. It wasn't digital.
Yeah.
That was film. Yeah. My first digital camera. It might have been. It's either a Canon or a Fuji. I think it was a Fuji. I've probably still got it as well.
My first digital camera was a Casio 500. It was a Casio 100, and it cost me £500, and that was in 98 99. It took 1.2 megapixel photos, and you could get 8 on the camera.
I guess technically my first digital camera was actually a phone.
Yeah,
it was a Nokia.
Yeah,
I'm not telling you, Neil, what my first digital camera was.
A Fuji.
It was a Nikon.
A Fuji.
It was a Nikon with a swivel body.
Yeah.
Oh, right, yes.
900
Yeah. Okay, great. Dama, you're just a tart when it comes to camera brands.
You want to hear my apology? You want to
Yes, we do. Come on then. What's this apology? Well, first of all, what have you done? What did you have to do to apologise for?
Well, I have to apologise because as soon as I finished the show last time, I went around the house and I realised I've got 20 plus more pictures hanging around the place that I printed out. And there was I, getting on my high horse about printing. And I found I printed off a whole load of pictures. God, we can't swear on this program. But
Your penance is you've got to send some pictures of all your pictures.
I think I'm on dry January at the moment, so it might have been the beer talking last time, but I have an apology that I do printing. And
that first camera being 2 megapixels, I printed the other day on my new printer, an iPhone shot at 16 by 12 inches.
Yes.
And it's brilliant.
It's
incredible.
It's incredible. We're going to talk about some phones later on, maybe. But yeah, it's just amazing what they can do.
So you're chucking away your camera now?
No. Yeah, might do. I go out and set everything up, and then do a quick iPhone picture to just set the scene and walk away with that one at the end.
Yeah, the iPhone.
Google's trying to match that.
Yeah. Okay, so you obviously we're all almost punch drunk from all this time off we've had. Let's get this show under the road, guys. We'll start off with the news that we've seen in the last few days and weeks. So in the news section this week, we're going to talk about photographic competitions. And there's a whole plethora of them have come out. I suppose they start the new year. A lot of them start to start their competitions. But I'm going to put up a website here now. Was it this one you found, didn't you?
I was looking around for them because the Sony one has just closed, but the Landscape's coming up and the British Photographic Award one is coming up.
Yeah,
and the other one that's quite a good one for me because I quite like, and I know, well, we all like taking pictures of the flowers and the garden. So the RHS, the Royal Horticultural Society one comes up, and that's they've got quite a high standard, but it's quite creative what you can put in for that one.
Yeah,
and I was reading an article on the close-up photography of the year that's only been running. Only been running for 3 years, and the founder, she was saying why she founded it and why it's such a good idea to go in for the competitions. And for me, I quite enjoy going in. I put a little, as I said in shows before, I put a little bit of money aside just to maybe have a little flutter of putting them in, and I quite enjoy it. And you know, I've had a few hits and misses.
There's probably something worth mentioning. I mean, all of these competitions, generally you have to pay a small amount or donate, I think in the case of one that I saw, but it's well worth reading the rules as to what they allow and what they don't allow you to do with an image.
Yep.
And the fact that you need to submit the original raw image as well quite often. Sometimes, I think as Ian has said before, you submit it when you submit the photos. Other times they ask it from you if you get through the first round, but it's quite often it's you've got to make sure you've got the photo the right size, otherwise you won't go anywhere.
Okay, so this site that I'm shown here, is called International Competitions. If you go and have a look at it, there are dozens of competitions on any range of subjects, from potatoes to mountain activity. So I'm sure there's something on there. If you look through the list, it gives you the deadline dates for when they were submitted, entrance fees, prizes, that sort of thing. That might give you somewhere to think, okay, let me have a go at this. I'm going to do a competition. If the guys here look through and we find one that we're going to join, we'll let you know. The other ones of note that we've seen are the Landscape Photographer of the Year. That's starting, that runs up until from January to May of this, May 22 for submission dates. And the other one was...
Photographic, I think that's July.
So it might not be a bad time this year, or a good maybe a New Year's resolution, to enter one or two competitions and just see what happens. All the guys here have entered and won, I believe. I think you're all winning photographers, aren't you? You've all won awards at certain times. So yeah, why not have a go? You never know, I might submit a picture of the moon if I ever get one.
Just to expand on Neil's point, the other thing to consider, one of the things that I find that I have to consider is normally some of these competitions will stipulate that you can't enter something that's been entered into a previous competition. Yeah. So you've got to be a bit careful, because you can't go and win, say, Wildlife Photographer of the Year with an image and have that same image potentially in another competition that could get shortlisted or win. You know, they want it specific for their competition, if you like. So you've got to be a bit careful. And I find it deciding which image might work best in a certain competition, if that makes sense.
And following on with that, Ian, is the big ones are quite trustworthy. They won't manipulate your images. They won't take them off you and publish them elsewhere. But sometimes you get to the middle order or the lower ones, then you might find you're giving the image rights away, and you've got to be very careful. So if you look at the, say, the Landscape Photographer of the Year, yes, they're going to use it if you win and publicise it, but they're not going to go and take your image and use it in other things if you haven't won or anything like that. But I think one or two other competitions, they will take, they're just a picture grab competition, and that's why some people get frightened about entering their pictures.
Those ones will often be free as well.
Yeah,
to be aware.
Yeah.
I mean,
on the subject of Landscape Photographer of the Year, I mean, I had a bit of a rant a few shows ago about, you know, I entered last year and they, you know, they didn't bother communicating. If you weren't successful, you know, you just didn't find out, which I thought was a bit naughty when you've, you know, you're paying. And the other thing that frustrated me a bit was their Instagram account. They got locked out of their Instagram account, which to me says that it got hacked. And they started up a whole new account. And I messaged them and said, look, is any of my data compromised? You know, if you can't keep a simple Instagram account secure, which they never replied. So actually, when their Instagram post from this week, they said, look, the competition's open, and I put a comment on there and actually replied this time. I said on there, will you be contacting people regardless of whether they're shortlisted? Because people are handing over their hard-earned cash. It'd be nice that you even acknowledge whether they were successful or not. And they said they will be. So, which I thought, maybe they've had a lot of feedback about that from last year. Because they used to do it. You know, you used to get the Dear John email. You haven't been successful. At least you knew. At least you weren't hanging on shortlist day and, oh, did I get anywhere?
So. Especially if you paid money for it, I think there should be an obligation that they should at least acknowledge, one, that they got your photograph, and secondly, they'll certainly get your money. And then, as you say, a follow-up to say that, sorry, you weren't successful this time. It's not rocket science, is it?
And as a final thing is to say that I was reading that one of the judges was writing in one of the magazines, and he says, your picture's got to be something that stops the judges in the track, something they haven't seen before, something different. And that's always the case, isn't it?
To add that, you know, when we've spoke about this before, if you do decide to enter some competitions this year, don't be disheartened if you don't get anywhere. No. Because, I mean, you take Landscape Photographer of the Year or Close-Up Photographer of the Year, I mean, they're getting literally tens of thousands of entries, and the judges have literally got seconds on that image, and it's like Damo says, it will be something about the image when it first comes up that grabs their attention, that might let them then hang on that image for a little bit longer. But otherwise, a lot of images are just next, you know. So it doesn't make it a bad image, it just means that for that particular judge, another judge could look at it and go, oh, that caught my attention. So
to come back, I mean, I was an academic, and one of the ways you had to live was to put research grants in. And every time you used to get knocked back, knocked back, knocked back. But if you kept on doing it, it was hard work. One did actually stick. And it's a case of don't take it personally, as you say, Ian. You just got to keep putting them in and make sure you keep the standard, and you never know your luck.
Subject we're going to talk about now, which has been spotted, is this new thing about photographs generated by AI. The link here will show you the site that we're talking about. But it's an interesting concept that they can take. I presume, guys, it's a bit like the old photo fit identity thing that the police used to use, in that they've got thousands of pictures of eyes, ears, nose, yeah, mouths, everything. And the camera, the computer puts all that together to create these images, because some of them look like real people, which is quite worrying. Some of them look like people I thought I knew, which is even more worrying. So how feasible is it? Is it Photoshop gone mad?
Well, you say it's feasible, they're there, the images are there. Totally feasible, isn't it?
I was watching a program on the BBC last night, and it was about dog thefts. And they had undercover police being interviewed, but it wasn't the actual policeman or even his voice. It was an AI. And it looked, yeah, okay, it wasn't 100% realistic, but boy, it was pretty close.
I think it wasn't quite,
what was his name? Max Headroom. That was the, might have been a giveaway. If he looked like Max, you'd be worried, wouldn't you?
I mean, the scary bit for me is, you know, if you are a portrait photographer and you do rely on, you know, selling some of those images, through stock agencies, etc. I mean, this is just putting you out of business, because, you know, the cost to hire a model, the cost to light it, etc., model release forms, you know, they can do this in how many seconds with a computer, and they probably can charge, you know, rock bottom prices, because it's not costing them much to put it together. Yeah. If you give it a few years' time, everyone will be images like this.
You're putting a catalogue together and you want all your clothing range to be done. Doesn't cost you anything, or hardly anything, for the models.
Mm. Definitely, yeah. Admittedly, if you do scroll down, there is a section called results may vary. Some of them you wouldn't want to meet on a dark night somewhere, I'll tell you.
There's a couple of good scowls.
But it's interesting the way that we talked about this last year, about the way where photography was going and what could happen. As you say, this could easily rub out a huge amount of regular work. As you say, the catalogue people and all that employ an awful lot of photographers to do that bog standard work for their catalogues. If that could all be done inside a computer by, you know, a young lad or a young lady, it could really have an effect on the photographic industry in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, there is a quote in there. I'm trying to find it now, because it's a German-based company. So the CEO, Michael Osterreider, he reckons within the next 5 to 10 years, 95% of all images will be AI-generated media. In the future, when it comes to the stock photo industry, I mean, that's just, you know, Google were doing that thing where you can just type a few words, you know, landscape with mountains and snow, and it will generate an image. I mean, it's just mad, isn't it?
Well, it's even quite impressive in the search engines. If you type in, as you say, type in mountain. Even in photos or something like that on your own computer, type in sunny smile, and it's amazing the pictures it will pick up from that and bring back.
I wonder if when Google, even maybe Apple, I wonder if they're crowdsourcing some of that information. Imagine the amount of information, and over time, the more images that you build up, the AI, it just gets better and better, doesn't it, over time. It's just going to get stronger and stronger.
Look at when you put in a face to be recognised in your own library, and it will pick out
in Lightroom or whatever
hundreds of photographs of that person. And it's getting more. I remember doing that maybe 6 or 7 years ago, and I was getting some really weird. I was looking for pictures of my sister, and I was getting a you know, the dustman down the road and all that kind of stuff. But now they're getting super accurate in the pictures that come through. And even what's been really interesting, I tried it on some old black and white photographs of some of my, I got a load of photographs from an uncle who passed away. And it recognised people in those photographs that I wouldn't have recognised. It was a younger version of my aunt or my mum's twin sister and stuff like that. So that AI stuff is becoming, I suppose it's to do with, don't they measure points around your eyes, ears, nose? Isn't that how they work rather than the actual image?
Yeah, it sounds about right. Yeah.
It's a bit
I wonder if the
face viewer on the camera,
yeah,
that does that, doesn't it?
Yeah. I wonder if you ever see any of these AI images that look like you. Can you go, I'd never signed a model release for that.
The first question you want to ask Ian is, where's my cut?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm sure that'll be somewhere in their terms and conditions. They'll have a line saying, if this image seems to look like you and it's not you, it's tough. You know, they cover their backsides, don't they?
The facial expressions on some of them are quite funny, I have to say.
They're a bit weird, yeah, some of them.
Okay, so watch out for an AI camera near you soon sometime.
And I have to say, none of them look happy.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Well, maybe that's their portrait, passport photographs, aren't they? Whatever you do, don't smile. Don't smile in a passport photograph. Yeah. Okay, the other thing I wanted to ask the guys about, I've seen there's been quite a bit of firmware update coming out from the major camera manufacturers, Canon and Nikon, Neil. They've brought out some firmware. Has that affected you with your stuff?
It's for the firmware that Nikon have brought out recently. It's for the Z9.
Right.
They've updated it. You know, it's only been out, I think they started delivering something like the 23rd of December. So it's only been out a couple of weeks.
He's waiting for a Z9. He's waiting for a Z9.
And they're now saying it's the highest, what's it now, the highest frame rate, continuous frame rate on any camera. It'll do 20 frames raw, continuous burst for 15 seconds, I think it is, and record the JPEG equivalent at the same time without any delay.
That's some processing power, isn't it?
Yeah. What's that, 20 frames a second for 15 seconds?
Yeah.
So that's 300 frames.
Right into two cards, right in the raw and the JPEG.
So that's 300 photographs in that time frame.
So you can take 300 rubbish photos.
All the same.
In 15 seconds. Yeah.
Ian, you lay off. That's my realm. Don't you start going down there. That's my personal realm. 300 dodgy photographs.
Yeah.
But that's immense. Now, I presume if the Canon tried that, you could fry an egg at the same time.
What, on the R5,
yeah. Or I think, well, didn't the firmware update cure a lot of that problem? But that's only if you were shooting 8K video, wasn't it?
Something that's important to say with this, it really does depend on what cars you're using as well. Yeah. They're using these pro-grade digital Cobalt cards, which I think the read and write speed is something like 1,500 megabytes per second. Sorry about that, that's my printer turning off. Yeah, it's crazy speeds on these things.
Yeah. We're going to talk about some cards in the next section as well about that very fact that you need to look at what your cards is. So, like all these things, you need to have everything in line to
I wonder how long it'll be before someone says, okay, we'll have a card on our system, but we'll have a built-in hard disk as well. Because if it's physically wired in, it'll read write much quicker. And then all you'll do is you'll use the card as the backup. And of course, it can write to the card much, much slower. It's not important because it can do that as a secondary effect.
Yeah, it does make you wonder why they haven't done something like that already, you know, built in SSD, because the speeds of SSDs these days, I mean, like you say, that would be, you could remove one of the bottlenecks, couldn't you?
Yeah.
And with USB-C, in the cameras, the to transfer those images off the camera into the computer would be, oh, it'd be so quick. But the limitation is, you know, how much storage do you go for? Be a very Apple thing, wouldn't it? Be, you know, 8 gig standard. Up to,
well, you'd probably have standard like a terabyte in there, I guess, because you know, if you're recording 8K, you're going to need a fair bit of space.
Yeah, imagine accidentally formatting
all that computing power. It's not very green because it's going to take all that energy just to do that. All that electricity is a bit like Bitcoin and all the storage of all these hard disks. It's great to have it on the cloud, but if you start thinking what it's doing and all the heat being generated somewhere in the world just to store all everything.
You're just trying to figure out why you need to print some more images.
Yes, I think I'll have to do that. Somebody asked on a Facebook page, what do you do with all your images? Do you just leave them on the card, or even though you back them up, how many of those images are actually being used? Or do you ever go back to them all?
I think it's a very good point, Damien. We've got tens of thousands of photographs now stored in most of our libraries. And other than maybe the time you actually take them and you put them into the system and you catalogue them or delete them or do some editing work, once that's done, do you ever go back to them? Maybe occasionally one or two if you're setting up a show, but I've got, I said, tens of thousands of photographs on there that I've never looked at since I took them.
It's interesting, certainly with the rugby club now, we're in our 50th year, so we're actually trying to find old photos, old team photos, and being able to go back. I've got the last 4 or 5 years now, so as we do, because it's our off, we have this mid-off season because of the weather. We've been doing stuff on individual players, but it's great to be able to go back and find 6 pictures of this guy, you know, of him playing rugby or doing something outside of rugby. So for clubs, it's really, really important to be able to go back and pick these things up. And people go and get old team photos, and so you've got those and you can put them up, especially when there's anniversaries. So yeah, it is good to go back and look. I mean, the photo competitions we were talking about, Landscape Photographer of the Year, you know, have a look through your last year's work. Maybe there's something there. Some of these competitions allow you to enter stuff that's up to 3-4 years old. So it's a good time to go back and maybe even re-edit.
You haven't even mentioned the box, the shoe box or bigger box of prints that you've got up in the loft somewhere. I've got 2 packing crates full of old photographs that were taken, you know, over the last 40 years, 50 years. So they're sitting there. They've never been looked at or never been seen. I'm sure there's some interesting stuff buried in there that, you know, give me some time off. Maybe I could go up there and have a look. The other one that I saw there was an interesting piece from Canon, which apparently the CEO has confirmed that the next 1DX Mark III will be the company's last flagship DSLR.
That's not quite right. The 1DX Mark III is a camera that's already out, so they're saying that's it. So the last 1DX digital SLR, that's it.
Oh, right. So there won't be an update already. To that. Right. No, okay. So that means that most of them now will be in the R range.
Yeah.
Though, what about the more minor ones? So, like something like the Canon D1000, you know, they're cheaper entry level models. Will they still go, or will they bring out a cheaper R model to get the initial enthusiast into the Canon?
I think they're always going to want something family. at that £200-300 price mark, aren't they? So, at the moment, I don't think you're going to get an R model at that price, but it's going to come, isn't it?
Nikon already have a couple of cameras that are down towards that price. You know, the AFC, the crop sensors. I'm surprised Canon haven't done something yet. Maybe we'll see it in the next year.
Yeah, they do need a cropped mirrorless camera because they don't make this. You know, the 7D Mark II is the powerhouse camera in the crop sensor world for Canon. But they've stopped manufacturing that. If you want to get one now, you've got to go secondhand. Yeah. So their flagship cropped sensor SLR, they don't even make anymore. So they do need something in the R range.
And a lot of the technology they're using in the bigger cameras, it's been a lot of this stuff's done with software. It'll transpose across quite well. It'll be obviously different sensor, so it'll be different, I don't know, drivers for the sensor or something. But the actual processing that goes on in the background and all the options for manipulation, they'll just be software switches. They'll probably switch on, switch off.
It'll also be to do with the style and build of the body. There'll be polycarbonate bodies and stuff like that rather than the alloy, the magnesium bodies of the top range R cameras. So that would make the savings there and reduce speeds and stuff like that, the cheaper lens range that they do. But so yeah, it's surprising that they haven't moved into that market yet. Maybe it's something we'll see this year. But all the top SLRs will be in the R range.
Yeah, and I think it was always inevitable. I mean, when you look at what the R5 and the R3 are capable of, those speeds, I don't think you'll ever achieve with a camera that's got a physical mirror. So they can never release anything that they can go, look, this is better than the R3. Yeah. It's not going to happen. So the natural progression is to move to the mirrorless range.
The other thing that I thought was quite interesting, I was reading something the other day, it's with the fact that you've gone mirrorless and now you don't have a shutter releasing. All these cameras before, you know, they're rated at X number shutter actuations. Well, if you don't have a shutter, where's the limitation? It actually doesn't matter now if you're buying a secondhand camera and it's, you know, someone's taken 30, 40, 100,000 images with it because the shutter isn't worn. It's not the part that might have to be replaced.
That's the bit that's going to go, than the physical shutter will be all electronic. Yeah. And I was just wondering how you would get
be down more to the,
used to get with the... Yeah.
Some of the mirrorless still do have a physical shutter though, don't they? I mean, the R5, I think, does, and it's rated to 500,000 shots, where if you compare like the 5D range, they're rated to around 150,000 shots.
The only one at the moment that doesn't have a shutter at all is the Z9, but they all use them in various different ways.
So the limitation on speed was the mechanical effort of lifting the glass mirror up, take the picture, put it back down again. If you're trying to do that, 10 times a second, that's quite a lot of mechanical movements required. So you can get rid of that, and then as they go over to electronic shutters, which is basically done on the chip, isn't it? That would be the speed.
People used to be wanting to worry about the number of megapixels, and now you've got about 20. Is that the limit, or do you want 40? Do you need 50? Are you going to print out to that? I mean, Ian, you said you printed out your iPhone picture. Do you need all those megapixels? And then again, the ISO, I think, will get better and better. I mean, some of them are getting 128. Now you can get 256. And the noise is being reduced, the noise reduction with the software. Are those the barriers that we're going to be hitting?
You need to be a little bit careful with that, because the higher the number of megapixels you've got with high ISO as well, you get more noise. If you're packing more pixels onto the same physical size sensor, you're sharing that that light between more pixels. Therefore, you're likely to have a higher signal to noise ratio on the sensor. So higher megapixels isn't always a great thing.
Isn't that one of the things with the Apple phone, that they've stuck with 12 megapixels for the last 5-6 iterations, and not chase the numbers like the other phone manufacturers have done? And as you say, Ian printed out what phone was that taken on, Ian?
No, so is that still 8 megapixels or is that 12? I can't remember.
Yeah, so and it's still, you know, still really. It always amazes me. I cannot to this day imagine that this tiny little lens that we look at on a phone can take such quality pictures. It's quite something. Mm. Talking of which, I noticed here we were looking at this to do with gear. That is it. The OnePlus range of phones have Hasselblad are involved in their development of lenses, which is, you say that was in the previous range, though they've made a much bigger noise about it in their 10 Pro smartphone.
So obviously, yeah, they had it in the 9 as well. So they've got a 3-year partnership between Hasselblad and OnePlus. Right. My son has one of these OnePlus phones, and I was talking to him the other day and saying, you know, how old was it? He's actually had it for 4 years now. And right. He says it's just as good as it was the day he bought it.
Yeah, yeah. And like, is it Leica lenses? Or is it not? Who's the lens manufacturer for Leica?
Sony's always been linked with Leica.
Yeah. Okay. And Zeiss, is it Zeiss lenses as well?
No, that's right, Zeiss and Sony, isn't it? Yeah.
They've obviously tied up with that.
So someone who shoots on the streets of Birmingham using the Google camera, I think it's a Google camera, it's got a 10x zoom, and he posts the pictures and you just don't see. I mean, is it real what it's zooming in, or is it just the software made everything look pretty? But it's amazing that the zoom you can get out of a handheld phone.
Yeah, I can give you one tip on handheld phones and screen protectors. I got a new screen protector for my iPhone because the old one was cracked. But I bought one by accident, which is a privacy screen as well. It's not very good if you're trying to shoot shots low down because you can't see the screen. Yeah.
That's a pro tip.
Yeah, watch what you buy.
I think we need to get back to having the black blanket over your head with the phone so you can actually see what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the things that we've heard is that a interviewee that we had on the show last year, Richard Fox, has won the prestigious WEX Photographer of the Year award. Ian and Damien, you were both with us when we were interviewing Richard. Fascinating guy, and some of his photographs were wonderful. Ian, how do you actually get to be Photographer of the Year for WEX? How does that work?
Yeah, so WEX run a weekly competition it used to be Twitter only, but they run it across Twitter and Instagram now. But you just you use a hashtag on a Monday of WEX Mondays. It's got to be an image taken in the last week. So to win overall is some achievement, because, you know, to have the dedication to go out every week, shoot something that's got to be pretty special, to be fair, because the standard is phenomenal. If you just if you can spend some time 1 week just looking through the entries, you know, look at the hashtag WEX Mondays, I mean, just phenomenal. Yeah. So just to win 1 week is amazing, but to do well enough across the year to win enough weeks or even get a second or third and accumulate those points that at the end of the year you're the overall winner is, you know, quite incredible.
So it's down to consistency then, isn't it, that you've got to be producing a wide range of photographs over quite a period of time. So that's fair. I think you entered it, haven't you, a couple of times, Ian?
Yeah, I've given it a good go over the last few years. I think the best I managed, was like second or third, I think. But and the odd sort of shortlisted image. But yeah, I mean, it's
Damien, have you entered a couple of times?
Yeah, I mean, it can be. It's an interesting to watch who are the judges, because the judges are the three young people at WEX, I guess, who do it. And I mean, don't take anything away from Richard and the gang of all the people that always end up in the top 10. They're very, very good. But I noticed that, Simon Great, because I think they're fantastic. But the picture, my snow picture in Noel, that I thought I stood a chance of getting into the top 10, but I didn't get anywhere. yet I saw that I was a second highest for comments and likes that week, but I didn't get anywhere. Yet it won the photo of the month from the Storm Hour. The photographers there made it photo of the month and said it was an excellent photograph. So it's all down to the eye of the beholder and that. But I only had one single photograph that was good. Richard has pictures that come in week after week after week. And they're not just on the landscape. He's tried his hand in a couple of other things and he's done really well. And he's amenable to chatting to as well, which is very good. So well done to him. Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a really, well, we know obviously from interviewing on the show, but he's just a really nice guy as well. And if he's one of these people that if you reach out to him on Twitter, he'll actually respond. Whereas there's a lot of photographers out there that think, well, personally, I get the impression sometimes they think that they're sort of above everyone, and you reach out to them on Twitter and you don't get nothing back at all, and you just think, oh, okay. But Richard is, yeah, really nice to chat to anyone.
He's obviously got a very good flexible job, but he can get out of the golden hour, or he can get out, I mean, and he lives in a nice part of the world as well. That takes nothing away from his skill, because he's got, you know, the ideal conditions and stuff. I'm trying to think of something to sort of say why, but you can't critically take him down anywhere. He's got every base covered.
Okay, so that's the news items we've been looking at over the last few days. Anyone who got anything that they think is interesting, please send it in. We're more than happy to talk about and look at other news items brought in by our viewers. Right, let's move on to gear that we've seen. Right, so what gear have we seen over the last few weeks? The guys here have been trawling the pages and looking around to see what of interest we thought we might talk to you about tonight. The first one we saw is, of course, Neil with a Nikon lens that he saw. Is it on the wish list, Neil?
It's going to be out of my price range, I'm pretty sure. So this is a new Z mount lens. It's a Nikon 400mm f2.8. prime lens. It has a 1.4 magnified drop in, which I guess will take it up to an f4 lens at 560mm. I don't know, it'd be interesting to see how heavy it is. They make an F mount already, which is nearly 4 kilos. It's a fair old weight of lens to be carrying around, and a fair cost as well, because that F mount lens is somewhere around about $11,000. So, yeah, great to see them bringing out more Z mount lenses. They released two before Christmas and another one just after Christmas. So they did the 100-400, the 24-120 f4. They released a 28-75 just after Christmas. And now there's this one coming out later in this month, the 400-2.8. And I believe there's another three or four lenses coming out as well. It looks a beautiful piece of kit, but it's going to be expensive. It is going to be expensive.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to have enough change out of your Z9 to get this one.
No, I mean, this is two Z9s. Okay. Yeah, the money's in the glass, but wow.
What's its use? What kind of use would you put a lens like that to or for?
Sport, with the 2.8, it'd be great for internal. If you're inside a building somewhere, certainly for bird photography, wildlife, stuff like that. I'm hoping I haven't frozen on your end, guys, because my end is frozen.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good picture to freeze on,
though. Yeah, it's showing your best side.
It looks like you're lost. Oh no, you're back. Yeah, you're it looks back. Like you're just lusting over the lens.
Exactly what I was doing.
You went into a.
It wasn't just the eyes that glazed over then for a second, was it? It was the whole shot.
It'd be a great bit of kit for sport or for bird watching, wildlife, stuff like that. But you're not going to be wanting to carry this around a lot with you. No. And I do wonder, if you've got the drop-in, how often will you, or how easy is it to swap to the 1.4 times? Is it just a lever or a switch?
Canon did one, didn't they, with a built-in. Yeah. And it literally, it was just a switch. So... Yeah. Yeah, I think the biggest thing, like you've mentioned, is there's no mention of the weight. But I'd imagine there's going to be a bit of a saving for being on mirrorless.
I would hope so, because the last one came in at 4 kilos. And I'm guessing they can drop the multiplier in because of the large aperture on the actual camera body itself. They've got the space and they've just almost been able to take the same glass. But they really need to address the weight, I would say.
Didn't we find, though, with the Canon lenses that were brought out for the R series, that they didn't need such a wide front element? Mm-hmm. And therefore, because that was smaller, then obviously that has an effect on all the glass lenses all the way through.
Yeah, I reckon there's definitely a saving to be had.
They seem to be shorter, didn't they? The like-for-like R lenses seem to be shorter than their equivalent L series. So mm-hmm. all of that would help to reduce the weight, I would presume.
Yeah, I mean, the Nikon ones have tended to be a similar length. Sometimes right. they're just fractionally different, but they are fairly similar at the moment. Mm-hmm. Having said that, they are way, way sharp. All of the Z mount lenses are extreme.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and this being a prime lens, it will be tack sharp, absolutely, no doubt about it. I mean, the f2.8, people go, well, why do you want f2.8 at 400mm? You're probably not going to use it at f2.8 because you're going to have a very, very shallow depth of field. There would be situations where you would use it, but it's going to be really sharp at like f4, f5.6, and you're still going to get loads of light. I've got the Sigma 150 to 600 lens, which for price is a fantastic lens, but it's 5.6 to 6.3. And most of the time you're at the 600mm end, so you're getting f6.3 at the most. Now, if you've got a day like we've had today, grey skies, poor light, you push really cranking up the ISO, then it makes it, harder to use. Whereas this,
That's almost three full stops more than what you've got then, is it 2.8?
2.5 stops.
Do you remember, Damien, at the show, the photo show last year, we looked at the Nikon, remember the Nikon cameras, and they had one had a 600 and the other had an 800mm lens on it. And the quality of what you could see was just phenomenal. And that was just through the viewfinder. Absolutely stunning.
I still love the little Nikon compact that I handled at the show. Let alone the lenses. I know we'll go to talk about lenses, but that little Nikon with all those little silver buttons on the top.
The DFC.
The Nikon on their roadmap, just to round off with the lenses, they've got an 800. People think it'll be about a 5.6 or 6.3. 800mm lens, and then there's a 200 to 600 and a 600mm, probably f4, and another, I think it's another 400mm. So there's still another four or five lenses to come, and they're all meant to be coming out early part of this year. The 200 to 600 is the one that interests me.
And are they matching the lenses like for like with the existing range?
No, not quite. So the 200 to 600 didn't exist. That was a 200 to 500 before.
Yeah.
So that's new. They never they do an 800, but not much. But 800 at 6.3, I think someone's estimated it to be. That'll be a hell of a lens. But again, it's going to be a hell of a price and a weight.
Yeah, five figures, I should imagine, there, easy. Yeah. Okay. Damien, you were saying about the cameras. Do you mention this, the Sony Alpha 7 you were looking at? What was that about?
Yeah, so it was just because we talk so much about the Nikons and we talk about the Canons and occasionally Fujifilm comes in, but we never chat too much about the Sony. And this has had very, very good reviews when it was released in November. And then there was a bit of a hiccup because they couldn't ship it in time. But now I see headlines are saying that it is being shipped and it's in the shops now. And I just wondered what people thought, because the crits on it are really good. They like it. There's a couple of disadvantages with it, but not really being, you're locked into systems. I'm locked into Canon at the moment. but it'd be interesting to know what a Sony user thinks of the flagship Sony cameras.
And it's not that the price on that one is quite reasonable, $2,400.
That's one thing I think Nikon have now on their cameras. They've got the price point pretty good,
right?
Compared to the other manufacturers.
Okay.
But I don't know any Sony users to know about where it sits and how competitive it is. Because Sony certainly wants to go places.
I've got a couple of friends that use Sony. They love them. The good cameras. From what I've had a little play with one. It's similar but different in many ways. One of the guys that at rugby takes a lot of photos with it, and he certainly produces some good photos. Sickeningly.
didn't Sony start the mirrorless movement, really? Were they the ones that brought the first mirrorless DSLRs out, weren't they?
Yeah.
But they seem to have they lost that lead?
I'm not so sure. Well, yes and no, in the sense of, it's like Damo says, like he's Canon because he's got the Canon gear. Yeah. Now Canon have got, Sony may do a better mirrorless camera, but because Canon now have a mirrorless offering, Damo's most likely to go Canon mirrorless. Not because Sony's inferior, because he's locked into Canon. So what Nikon and Canon have now got is a very, very good offering. So there's less of an appeal for people that are, you know, hardcore Canon Nikon shooters to jump ship. Whereas in the last few years, a lot of people were, because Canon and Nikon didn't have the offering. There were photographers, you know, going from Canon, Nikon. They were going to Sony because Sony were ahead of the game. So,
And I believe it was fairly easy to transfer Canon lenses onto Sony's, wasn't there? There was an adapter that you could get so you could use your Canon lenses.
Yeah, I think there were still sort of disadvantages to it.
You tend to lose a bit of speed.
Yeah.
I think the pressure will come ground up. The mobile phones will start adding more and more pressure as people start to drop down to them. And the market for these high-end cameras, I mean, how big is that market and how stable will these companies be able to stand? You know, the high-tech, the producing really high-tech equipment and all the R&D that's going into there, and then they've got to sell them. Now, I know Nikon do other things. The camera's not just their things, and I know that the other companies do. But I think that's going to be, I think market forces might dictate what happens.
I think the bleak outlook could be that, you know, there's always going to be sports photographers, wildlife photographers, architectural photographers. There's always going to be people that need the high-end equipment. So the danger is that the market just gets smaller and smaller. And unfortunately, this equipment just gets more and more expensive. Economies of scale, isn't it? You know, you can have your R3, but it's going to cost you 10 grand instead of 5 grand because, you know, there's hardly anyone buying it.
Well, I think it'll also boil down to the glass. Who produces the best glass? Mm-hmm. Because the only reason to move will be because you want a better piece of glass to get a crisper image, or you want a faster shot for some reason.
Yeah, I guess what we're not seeing at the moment is, and maybe someone's missing the trick with this, is there's loads of people clearly doing photography because they're doing it on their phone. Because Canon don't make a phone, because Nikon don't make a phone, I guess Sony do. Where are these manufacturers able to get someone who's really enthusiastic about photography on their iPhone to then make the leap and buy a mirrorless SLR or something? What's that progression, I guess?
Is there a progression to, and I have a feeling someone's done this once before, is there a progression to somehow take a mirrorless and actually start integrating phone functions into it?
Samsung did it, didn't they, a few years back? They had a compact camera that had was a phone as well.
Yeah.
Obviously it's not around anymore, so it didn't prove that successful. But I do think there's a massive market there, because there's clearly loads of people that are into photography. So there is an opportunity to tap into those people and go, yes, your phone's great, but it can't do X, Y, and Z. You need this.
Yeah.
But how do you get someone from Apple to Canon?
Photography might just go sideways because of the TikTok generation and the Instagram tech. The idea of having still photography, it's all about videos, that you might see things disappear that way.
It's always going to be around, but it might be smaller. You know, like vinyl's still around. There's people that are still really enthusiastic about vinyl, but it's a much smaller market. Photography could go that way, but there's always going to be people like us that are really passionate about photography. There's always going to be a market, but potentially it's going to shrink.
It's a bit like film photography coming back.
Mm.
You know, it's becoming more popular, more people are doing it. It's a bit more of an art.
I suppose it's also, as I say, horses for courses. If you go last, I went to the air show, and there you have literally thousands of people, all with SLRs, all with huge lenses and the whole kit and caboodle. Go to a open air pop concert or festival, everyone's got cameras. Everyone's using their camera phone. You hardly see, other than the camera pit with a few photographers in it, you hardly see a camera being used at that kind of event. So I suppose it's that new generation of people who don't see progression into SLR photography as the natural step from the Instamatics we used to have, and the 120 cameras and all that kind of range. That was what people took the bulk of their photographs on, and a few of us moved on to SLR photography. I don't think that step is there today. I think people are using their phones, and for the vast majority, there's no need for them to move on to anything.
The old progression was, if you went from a compact camera to an SLR, whereas now your compact camera is your smartphone, and you're not seeing the reason to progress to an SLR or mirrorless camera. So, yeah, I think there is an opportunity there, though. I think maybe Canon, Nikon, Sony need. There is a massive audience there that are obviously keen into photography because they're doing it on Instagram, et cetera, et cetera. They've got to find a way of tapping into those people and going, look, if you want to take your photography further, this is the kit you need.
There's some new memory cards here that you spotted.
Yeah, so I saw these today. OWC, Otherworld Computing, look like they're getting into the memory card business. They've just announced SD and CF Express cards. And it's interesting because they're, as a brand, I know them as a brand from my Mac and doing buying upgrades and stuff from them for my Mac.
Because they do memory chips and stuff like that, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They sell hard disks, displays, docks, all that sort of stuff. And dead stuff that is very good. It's reliable. It works. So, yeah, them getting into this is a really interesting thing. If the cards are as reliable as their other stuff, it'll be great. But you need to look at the speed of these things. Now, I've been looking at cards quite a bit in the last week or so because I was looking at, the speeds of the Z9 and some of the reports. And there's a huge range of speeds of cards. So with the Z9, they're talking of cards writing up to 1,500 megabits per second. That's just a massive data transfer. And these ones here, some of them are only at 270 megabits per second, which is still fantastically fast. But cameras now are pushing the limits so much with the read-write speeds, and not just for stills, but for 8K video, for instance, the size of the images that are being stored, that they have to be fast. And you do wonder if you're using some of these cards at those sort of speeds, how hot they get as well.
It does say the Pro Ultra cards can deliver a sustained 1400 speed.
Yeah.
So.
And they peak out at 15 or something, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But interesting that a company like that's getting into this area. Yeah. Good. It's going to only make the cars cheaper because there's a huge range of cost for cards. You could buy a card for like $200 all the way up to $600-$700 for the same capacity card. There's a massive difference between the top and the bottom. And you're buying speed and reliability most of the time, mm-hmm. or brand name. So it'd be interesting to see what these are like.
I remember you had a Steve Ballmer moment, I remember last year, Ian, when you said, who would need a 1 terabyte SD card? And here we are.
Yeah. Someone using an S9 at 300 shots every, was it 15 seconds?
When
I saw this, I immediately thought there's a brand that I would trust. And I think that when it comes to memory, I think that's really important because I do tend to stick to certain brands. And I know it's a bit of a risk because these guys don't traditionally do memory cards, but with their history, I know that a lot of people have always spoken highly about them when it comes to upgrades and that to their computers and peripherals and stuff. So it is someone that I would trust, I think.
Yeah. You've also got to hope that that they wouldn't want to put their reputation at risk by producing poor memory cards, because that would could have a knock-on effect on their other products that mm-hmm. they do. Yeah, like you said, I've used OWC before. So yeah, that's really interesting. What's the sizes of those cards? Do they
go up to 2 terabyte.
Yeah,
but they're not available. It's interesting, they're not available yet. They won't be available until second quarter, they say.
Yeah. Okay. And no price is disclosed yet. But you can imagine them being fairly competitive, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
And again, as you've mentioned before, Ian, if you've got a £5,000 or £6,000 body camera with a £6,000 or £7,000 lens on it, you're going to put it on a £100 tripod, aren't you? So, you're going to use all that kit and put it onto a £25 Tesco CF card.
Then you shouldn't be disappointed when you lose the data.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Good. Okay. So that interesting range of gear that we've seen in the last few weeks, we'll look forward to more as we go through the year. So a quick mention to our sponsors, TSO Hosts, who provide all the services that we need to get these shows out to you all. They provide all the server bandwidth we need, as well as support for our systems. They're a great company to work with. I have my own site with them. And if you need anything to do with web, design, domain names, hosting, anything like that at all, please contact them. And if you mention BTN20, they'll even give you a big discount off your first orders. Our other main sponsor here is iMen Max here in Birmingham, who are able to service and repair and upgrade any Apple kit or Apple machines that you've got. And they can even provide some really good refurbished machines with excellent value for money. And they deal with any kind of problem, actually. That's a nice bunch of guys. Just give them a ring if you have an issue, anything to do with your Max, and I'm sure they can help you out. So, Damien, where can people get hold of you?
I'll put on the demo this week, and then you can click on that, and you can find all my links from the headline on the demo.
Great, Neil. Where can we get hold of you?
You can find me. I'm Dodsy Photo on Instagram and dodsyphoto.ch. It's my website.
Okay.
Which I must update again.
Ian, where can we get hold of you?
IanLewisPhoto.co.uk.
Okay, lovely. We've also got an Instagram site, haven't we, Neil? How do we do that?
We have, we're btn.photoshow. Tag us in your post for a feature, or hashtag BTN photo, photo show, I should say. So we're growing a little community there. Come and check us out.
Great. Okay. My name's Martin Kelly. You can get hold of me at martinkelly@mac.com or as Magic Man in the BTN Slack rooms that we all belong to. And I'll post a link here if you'd like to join. Just send us a quick email saying, can I join? And we'll get you involved. Okay, so till next month, next show, we'll see you all then. Good night, guys. Good night, all.
Cheers, guys.